This is Pause for Thought, a podcast brought to you by Animal Therapies Limited. My guest today is Vanessa Hawkins, a self-confessed horse nut who was riding ponies in England before she could walk. When her family emigrated to Australia in 1968, her passion for horses just grew stronger. Growing up in rural Victoria, where her British accent made her a target for bullies, Vanessa found solace in Pony Club, eventually competing at state championship level and then overseas. Fast forward many decades, and Vanessa is still finding solace in horses, as well as a very satisfying career path, more recently helping neurodiverse clients and people with physical challenges. This is her story.
Ness Hawkins, welcome to Pause for Thought today.
Thank you, Candy. It's lovely to be here.
Ness, I really don't know where to start this podcast because your life has been such a rich tapestry with many sliding door moments, many challenges, although there has been one constant throughout, and that's horses. So you were born in Cyprus to British parents. Is that where you were introduced to horses? Can you recall your earliest memory of them?
I think my earliest memory was when we actually left Cyprus and went back to England, because I was only 8 months old then. So, but I remember being on the back of a horse before I could even walk. So I think when you're British, you have ponies in your genes. So it becomes a bit of a progression naturally.
You emigrated to Australia as a young child in the 60s, and I understand you moved schools 8 times and experienced a lot of bullying. Why was that, and what effect did it have on you?
It was very traumatic in retrospect, and I really think it was probably because of my British accent at the time. So I learnt to speak Australian, mate, very quickly to survive. But I think because I spoke ever so nicely and I wore pretty little frocks and I rode ponies, back then it wasn't cool. So we moved around not because I got expelled, but because my parents just moved, and that made it really hard to make that transition and make new friends every time we moved. And I don't think, I honestly think that they were genuinely trying to do the right thing by all of us. I was the eldest. My brother and sister didn't really get as affected as I did, but I really struggled. And consequently, I think my academic learning perhaps was stalled because of that trauma. But I also think that it was the start of my journey of learning that survival and that resilience. And even though it still cuts deep, it helped me develop the skills to stay true to myself.
How did horses help you deal with that trauma?
At the time, I don't think you're consciously aware that they're actually helping you. But when I look back on it, it gave me a purpose and a connection and a friendship and solidarity. And I think because of my success during my riding, I felt appreciated, I suppose. I think we all need that. But it gave me probably more purpose and distraction at the time, which I was eternally grateful for that opportunity, really.
You trained as a nurse. You juggled that profession for decades alongside a successful riding, eventing career, as well as training horses, breeding them. You must be a supremely organized person. Where does all that drive and motivation come from?
Oh, gosh, I wish I could bottle it. I wish I knew. Thank you. I became a nurse because I was desperate to be a vet. And back then, my parents were, don't be so ridiculous. You know, who is going to employ a female vet? Now you're struggling to find a male vet. But, you know, back then, they really didn't think that that was a viable option. So I, after school, took off to the mountains and worked up in the high plains and had a wonderful time developing relationships with mountain cattlemen, and it was an honor to meet some of them and to be invited into their shrine and their life. And then the reality was I actually had to earn an income. So nursing seemed just like an option. So came back to Melbourne and nursed and trained. But it was after nursing, and it was that I got asked to ride in an Australian team in Germany. And did that, and then we had an official tour, and then I spent 6 months traveling with a backpack and friends around Europe. And that changed my direction in life big time. Even though I still love my nursing, I think by the time I came back, the nursing profession had started to change. Back in 1988, when nurses were starting to strike and stand up for different reasons, then things started to change and I changed my direction as well.
You changed your direction, but you incorporated in that new direction, I guess, your vocation of nursing, I suppose. Can you just tell me where you went from there?
So left nursing, much my parents discussed, to go to Glen Ormiston Agricultural College to study horse breeding management for 2 years full time. And my parents said, what the hell are you going to do that for? That's 2 years of nursing income down the drain. What the hell are you doing that for? There's no future in the horse industry. But I did it anyway because I was pretty focused then and very passionate about what I wanted to contribute to the Australian horse industry, because I'd seen facilities and breeding programs and initiatives overseas that we had nothing like any of it back then. So I came back pretty focused, and that's went to college to study more of the theoretical components of the breeding and horse management.
And at what stage did you become interested in animal-assisted therapy and animal-assisted services?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because I think I've probably been doing it innately all my life. Ever since I was 8 years old, I can remember rescuing people and horses, animals, and just rescuing things and wanting to contribute to a solution, contribute to improvement in people's lives somehow. And I think my mother was also the same. You know, she set up hospice care and I used to help her with terminally ill patients. She set up respite programs for people with disabilities and I helped her. Helping people and making lives better. Like, I mean, I remember bringing in drug addicts off the street and talking to them about how we could help them, and just crazy situations where every person that would come into our lives, it was more about them and how could we help them achieve their goals. So now that it's got a name, animal assisted services, that's only new to me, and I feel like it's something that I've done for a long, long time innately.
Well, today you run Euroa Horse Park in northeast Victoria, where you work with neurodiverse clients as well as people with physical challenges, and you incorporate horses and cattle into your animal-assisted learning programs. So let's talk about the horses first. Now, unlike most equine therapy programs, your clients actually ride the horses or take part in carriage driving. How does that work?
So depending on their goal, but also their physical capabilities. And when I say that, I mean I have a client who I had today who weighs over 100 kilos and is over 6 foot and has never really ridden a horse. He wants to ride, but is the best way to drive and create an awareness about the horse before we ride? It's a process and a discussion that I have one-on-one with every single client. So I sit with them and say, what are your goals? You know, right through to like a 12-year-old boy who was born a drug addict, a heroin addict, whose goal was to be the Lone Ranger. So I quickly had a horse, a grey horse called Sugar, which I quickly called Silver. So it's more about focusing on the individual, their goals, their mental state, their physical state, and where they've been and where they're going. So in other words, assessing them and saying, okay, let's create a plan that's going to help you achieve your goals.
So do you work with health professionals, or is this something that you do on your own in an animal-assisted learning capacity?
Both. I consult with professionals that want to be engaged in the process or who have referred their clients to me, so OTs and physios, welfare officers. So depending on how the referral comes or how the introduction comes and how much they want to be involved, or they might be involved for a little bit and then realise that we're actually okay for them to step away. Like I have a 60-year-old lady who has a brain injury and suffers with quite severe vertigo. So when she first started coming, she'd never ridden a horse before. And my challenge was getting her on, let alone off. And I designed this rock platform to getting her on and off. And that worked brilliantly. But I needed that second person to help with her stability. It's sort of an evolutionary process, really, I find.
I wanted to ask you about the carriage driving. Is that more for clients who are perhaps have physical disabilities where it precludes them from riding a horse, for example?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's a physical thing. Sometimes it's a confidence thing, a mindset maybe. It's an interesting one because you very clearly pick up in the early stages which clients want to sit on the back and can benefit from the physical and emotional and mental benefits of being on a horse's back. So that's where we start to talk about the hippotherapy as well. So if they have physical disabilities, there's some hippotherapy. Not that I'm a trained hippotherapist or physiotherapist, but there are some definite physical benefits in being on the horse and feeling that motion underneath them that then translate into emotional and mental therapeutic benefits as well. But then there are others that are disengaged from that, and you can sort of tell from just being around them that actually it doesn't really mean much to them at all sitting on the horse. They like the idea, but actually they just love being around them and being part of them, and being in a carriage is just as good and achieves the goals just as well.
I'm really intrigued about how you incorporate cattle into your animal-assisted learning program. What special qualities do cattle have that makes them an effective healing or therapeutic tool?
It's a really great question because it was something I never, ever predicted would happen. I've been around cattle all my life. You know, I've chased them around paddocks and mustered them in yards and had a lovely time as a child being around them, but never seen them as a friend or as a companion. So since moving over here, I bought a handful just to help with pasture renovations, and the clients gravitated towards them. And so by spending time watching them and interacting with them gave all of us, and, you know, I felt the therapeutic benefits as well, it gave all of us this great sense of peace because we were accepted as part of the herd. We were allowed to move around them and integrate with them, and eventually the touch became an important part. And that stimulated the urge and the need and the desire to be trusted by them. But the communication with the cattle became a really intriguing process because they're very much in a family situation. So you've got to take in the dynamics of the bull, cows, the calves, the protective nature of the cows over their calves, who will trust you, who won't trust you, who do you need to look out for, and I start to read the body language of the animals that you're around, which you're doing with horses as well. But the cattle are slower moving usually and just more grounding, just really bring you back into an earthy situation where you feel part of their family. Whereas the horses, you tend to be more one-on-one, which is a little bit more intense. And because the horse is more reactive, it's a good thing because it depends on the client and what you're trying to achieve. But the horse is very much focused on you, whereas the cattle really don't care as long as they trust you. And it's quite interesting to watch, even now when I introduce strangers to the cattle, they go, actually, I don't know you. I know you, but I don't know you. So I'm going to take the biscuit out of your hand, but not your hand, because I'm not actually quite sure. Whereas a horse will probably take a carrot out of anyone's hand. So it's really interesting dynamics. And I'm not suggesting that I have solved it all or understand it all, but it's an evolving process that I find really intriguing and incredibly valuable.
How do you measure success with your clients?
Yeah, another really good question. Progress in their mental and emotional and then physical health. So if client is happy and enjoying what they're doing, they're going to progress a lot quicker, and they're going to want to be engaged, and they're going to want to be involved and want to learn and try different things. And they feel valued and appreciated by being here, because I encourage them to be part of the whole farm.
How do you get clients? Are they referred to you, or is it word of mouth? How does that happen?
A bit of everything, really. I don't advertise, and I certainly, it isn't my core business. It's not something that I do full time. But again, like I've done all my life, is if someone comes to me for help, then I will find a way of helping them. And I've recognized the benefits now. And I love the fact that we can give back and make a difference, and being creative with that strategy to help them achieve their goals. So now that we've got a name for what we do, Animal Assisted Services, I feel quite passionate about spreading that word to communities, society, government, health practitioners, schools, any particular group that I feel would benefit from knowing more about the benefits of this. So that's why I'm now running clinics and inviting other experts, or inviting experts that have way more experience than I do, to help progress with the teaching of animal-assisted learning, animal-assisted therapy, hippotherapy, and just general awareness. That in itself has been amazing, because I've tried to integrate able-bodied riders as well as riders with disabilities.
Ness, you run special events, Horses for Healing Days, so people can learn more about the benefits of animal-assisted services. I know you've run some recently. Can you just tell me who was involved in that, and what events perhaps are coming up that people could look out for or register?
Sure. So pre-COVID, we ran Horses for Healing workshops with equine facilitated learning practitioners. People that attended those events were health practitioners, which ranged from OTs, physios, speech therapists, welfare officers, and volunteers that were working with RDA at the time, Riding for Disabled Association. So a lot of people that were working, that had clients and that were working with clients that required animal-assisted therapy and learning, attended to learn more about being practitioners. And then we had practical sessions with clients that needed the animal-assisted learning and animal-assisted therapy as well. So people that were watching, some of the practitioners that were watching, could watch the sessions and how they were delivered to the people that needed them to improve their abilities and skills, but also the participants were benefiting as well. So since COVID, I'm initiating more of those clinics, and I'm quite keen to see more collaboration between the practitioners, able-bodied riders, and people with disabilities to all come together, because there's this great swell of appreciation for everybody within those dynamics. And it happened recently in the October clinic that we had. So we're going to replicate that program again in February 3rd and 4th. And I hope to do more of them in the future, to invite health providers and practitioners and clients who can benefit, plus riders, to become more aware of the biomechanics, their proprioception and their introspection, which apply to able-bodied and disabled riders, to become more aware of themselves and what's happening, so that they can find strategies to improve what they're trying to achieve and their goals. So some of these riders are Paralympians, but not everybody wants to go to the Paralympics. Some people just want to be able to ride independently of a leader, or just become more confident in the saddle or more effective in the saddle as a rider. Now, whether they have a handler or not is dependent on the person. So it's more a process of sharing the facilities and the people and the expertise in that beautiful community that we're developing to help everybody. So I'd love to do more of those. in the February one, I'm integrating a physiotherapist called Kim Slaven, who I've known for many years. She's an advanced event rider. She was a jockey, and she runs her own physiotherapy practice.
So I'm a bit hesitant to ask where you go from here. Do you still have a lot of unmet goals?
Yes, there's so many unmet goals. The education part of what I do is what I'm most passionate about. So I'm time poor when I'm running the farm and programs and one-on-one sessions to develop the materials that I want. But there is, in my retirement plan, I've already written a couple of books, which I haven't really promoted, but I plan to do more books and more educational forums about helping others understand. And I think it's more about trying to take quite a complex subject and trying to make it simple for people to understand and give them something that they can connect with and then take away and apply with their own personality and in their own space.
Well, Ness, it's been an absolute pleasure having you as a guest on Pause for Thought today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure talking. I hope it all made sense. I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year. So thank you.